has been on this voyage, then the Lord knows that I will not come to this outlandish spot again. As it is, I am fully prepared to believe it is the devil's country, peopled only by barbarians. A popular English misconception about Scotland, the Duke of Strathnairn said cynically. Lord Hinchley threw himself down in a chair, which was no longer swinging from side to side, in the comfortable saloon of the ship, in which they had been buffeted about in an unpleasantly rough North Sea for the last 7 days. "If you ask me," he said confidently, "you were extremely wise when you shook the soil of Scotland from your feet and came south. You have made a mistake, as I have told you before, Taran, in returning." The Duke's face darkened, and he went to the porthole to stare out at the tree-covered land, past which the ship was sailing on its way up the Firth of Tay. He had no intention of explaining, even to his closest friend, that every instinct in his body rebelled at the thought of coming back to the land he had left in a fury 12 years earlier. He had been only 16 at the time, and the cruelty of his father, which had not only bruised his body, but humiliated his pride, made him swear that for the rest of his life he would never have anything to do with Scotland or its people. He remembered how he had crept aboard the first available ship in Perth Harbour, and, unable to afford more than the poorest passage, had suffered intolerably in the airless, stinking hold below decks. But his late mother's relatives in London had welcomed him with open arms. They had sent him to a famous public school, and afterwards to Oxford University. And, as the Marquis of Narn, sponsored by his grandfather, who had been in attendance on the Prince Regent, he found life both civilised and enjoyable. He had, in fact, almost forgotten that Scotland even existed. When his grandfather died, he left him a large estate and a great deal of money. Basking in the friendship of the regent, now King George IV, London provided him with everything he wanted and everything he enjoyed. It had come like a bombshell 3 months ago to hear that his father was dead, and he was now not only the Duke of Strathnairn, but also chieftain of the clan MacNairn. Somehow, he had always believed his father to be indestructible. When he thought of him, which was seldom, he had seemed ageless and terrifying, like one of the ancient giants described in the ballads he had listened to the bard singing when he was a child. He was silent for so long that Lord Hinchley, rising to pour himself another brandy, said, "You look depressed, Taran, and that glowering expression on your face is grim enough to frighten your clansmen, or whatever you call them." "And a good thing if they are frightened," the Duke replied, "because in that case they are more likely to obey me." Even as he spoke, he knew that he was libelling the MacNairns, for the clansmen invariably obeyed their chiefs. In fact, he remembered his father saying once, "A chief stands halfway between his own people and God." Then he told himself, almost by way of reassurance, that the days of such servitude were over, and now that a chief no longer had the power of life and death over his people, their feelings for him would obviously not be the same. "Well, all I can say," Lord Hinchley remarked as he sipped his brandy, "is that if I have to travel back in the Royal George with His Majesty, I shall lie down in my cabin and drink myself insensible until we reach Tilbury." "It will be calmer on your return," the Duke said automatically, as if he was thinking of something else. "And as the King is a good sailor, he will expect you to be on your feet, telling him how much the Scots appreciated his visit." "The question is, will they?" Lord Hinchley asked. "I blame Walter Scott for inspiring the monarch with this urgent desire to come to Edinburgh. If the Scots have any sense, they will cut him down with their claymores and stick their dirks into him." The Duke did not speak, and Lord Hinchley continued. "My grandfather served in the Cumberland Army, which took part in the Battle of Culloden. His description of the manner in which the Scots were massacred and the cruelties inflicted on the survivors afterwards should make any Englishman think twice before he braves the vengeance which is undoubtedly still seething in their breasts." "It was a long time ago," the Duke remarked. "I would not mind betting you that they have not forgotten," Lord Hinchley replied. "I think you're right about that."
"Of course I am right," Lord Hinchley said positively. "All barbaric people have their feud."